Good morning. As we continue to study from the into the cross, if you'd open your Bibles up to Matthew, the 26th chapter. We'll spend some time in the Gospels this morning, so we'll be turning back and forth, so because we won't be reading all of it, but we will be referring to it, or I will be referring to it, and I'd like you to be able to kind of read there as I go through and talk about some of the things that are going on with the apostles here as they are confronted with the fact that the things that Jesus is saying and has been telling them is about to happen. The things that he's been telling them for some time are about to come true. That the things that he's been doing with them is to prove that what he says is true. To prove that what he says is that he's the Christ. Last week, Dave talked about the communion and the Passover meal that they shared. And this happens, all of this that we're talking about today happens in very short order after this. It's one of those things where you read it and you've read it maybe time and time again growing up, and you start to consider this very short amount of time that this takes place. Everything's been building to this moment, and now it's coming right now, right here, and they're in the middle of it. And they've just had this supper, and they've just had this communion with God, with Christ, and in remembrance of what God has done for the Jews, the Passover. And Jesus gives them a bit of information that's a little hard to swallow. They're not accepting of it. And Peter, as Peter is to do, takes special exception to what Christ has to say. And as Joe just read, he tells Jesus, "That's not the way I see it." He tells Jesus, that's not how this goes down in my book. That's not how I want to be remembered. That's not the way I think I'm going to respond to this situation that you're telling us is coming. That Peter is still in denial of it because Jesus told him this a long time ago, that this day was coming. But what has Peter been through? Why would he think this? Why would he think this is not going to happen? This can't happen. Well, let's talk about what he's been through. First of all, he's a fisherman. And you fish and you think I can make it better. I can try a new way. I can do it a different way. I'll try a different spot. It's dependent on me. I have to do it. We also know that, you know, he was pretty much, he said what he thought. You didn't have to wonder, I wonder what Peter's thinking. Because you pretty much knew from the start, he was going to tell you. You know, there was a bunch of other guys here. You don't read of any of the rest of them saying, "Jesus, I don't think that's the way it's going down." Peter did. They were all in agreement with him, though. They as soon as he brought it up, they backed him. They said, "Sure, no, that's, yep, we're with you. Yeah, we're not, that's not us." But you didn't hear anybody bring it up. Peter brought it up. You didn't have to wonder what he was thinking. He's seen a lot with Jesus, right? He's seen people healed. He's seen his own mother-in-law healed. He's seen demons thrown out. He's seen people brought back from the dead. He's seen Jesus walking on the water, even himself walking on the water. He's seen Jesus know the thoughts of those around him, their hearts, their actions when he wasn't there. So he's seen all this stuff. Oh, I left out, he was the first one to use the ATM, right? Threw in a line, pulled out some coins. You got that, which was, you know, amazing for a fisherman. I'm sure as a fisherman, he'd never pulled up a fish and found some money, but that's what he did. He got to use that. He's even been told that he has the keys to the kingdom. That he has been given the keys to the kingdom. He's confessed that Jesus is the Christ. He's witnessed all this. He's experienced all this. But we read back in Matthew 16, not very far after that, if you turn over there to Matthew 16. And right after he's been told that he's going to be given the keys to the kingdom in that chapter, it says Jesus begins to explain in the 21st verse of the 16th chapter of Matthew. From that time, Jesus began to explain to his disciples that he must go to Jerusalem and suffer many things at the hands of the elders and the chief priests and the teachers of the law, and must be killed on that third day to be raised to life. Peter again takes him aside and says, Jesus, you got this wrong. I was all good with the kingdom. I was all good with, I have the keys. I'm good with the miracles. I'm good with you changing my name, because you'd change my name when you met me. But this here is not going to fly. You will not die, because I said so. Because it's not going to happen, because I have a sword, I'm a fisherman, I'm tough, I make my own way in this world. This is not going to happen, Jesus. And Jesus has to tell him, get behind me, Satan. You're a stumbling block for me. You do not have the mind on your mind, you do not have in mind the things of God, but the things of men. Because in his mind, was this the perfect scenario? Was this the perfect kingdom? Peter says, you can heal everybody. You can make this place perfect. You can make this place heaven. But Jesus says, I'm not here to make this heaven. And just a little further on, he says, what does it matter if a man gains the whole world and he loses his soul? I'm here to make it so your soul can be reconciled to God, Jesus tells him. Jesus tells Peter, I'm here to tell you that I'm going to make it so you can spend eternity with God. Not to make the short time on earth that you have here seem like heaven. It's not going to be that. I'm not here for that. This stuff I'm doing is to show you that I'm from God. I'm in control of this world. I made this world, and now God has sent me here to be a sacrifice for you once and for all. This meal they've just had in the 26th chapter of Matthew reminds them of that sacrifice. He's just told them that this sacrifice back in 16, when he started to tell them about his death, is that perfect sacrifice? Is that once and for all sacrifice? Now, if you'd have taken Peter aside and said, Peter, I'm changing the story about Passover. The lamb lives. There's no blood. That's it. Well, wait a minute. That's not how it goes. There was a sacrifice required. There was blood required. That all has to happen. We still do that today, they say. We just had that meal. He accepts that. He knows that. Jesus is telling him, yeah, and this sacrifice that I'm going to make is the perfect sacrifice to make you reconciled to God. But don't you see Peter there? Or see Peter there in that 16th chapter as you and me? We're all there for the kingdom. And the good stuff. And the great things that are promised. But then there comes that part about you need to be like Jesus. Selfless. Self-sacrificing. You're like, I don't know. That's not what I had in mind, Christ. That's not what I had in mind, Jesus. When it says that you're going to know ridicule and be persecuted, can we leave that part out? Can we skip over that part? And Peter's the same way here. Peter's like, I like all that good stuff you were talking about. I like all this healing. I don't like the part where you die. I don't like the part where you have to sacrifice yourself for me. But our example there is of self-sacrifice. Jesus says, I'm here to sacrifice myself for you. It's a hard pill to swallow. They're wrestling with it. They've been with him all along. How can you say this? It's not the first time he said it. It's not the first time, but now it's becoming real because he's saying, it's going to happen soon. It's going to happen now. It's coming. If we read in John's account, in the 13th chapter of John, starting in about the 31st verse and continuing on. Jesus again in this account tells them that he's going to be glorified. He's going to glorify God. The Son of Man, now is the Son of Man glorified, and God is glorified in him. And again, you can see the confusion. And then he tells them that where he's going, they can't go. But they will follow later. And again, Peter, in this account, says, why can't I go with you now? I want to go now. I want to go where you are at. I've gone with you ever since you called me. Why can't I go this time? And then Jesus tells him, because he says, I'm ready to lay my life down now. Jesus tells him, will you really lay your life down for me? I tell you the truth, before the rooster crows, you will disown me three times. And in John's account, we read the lengthy account of how Jesus spends the next three chapters of John comforting them, preparing them for what's coming, telling them that, don't worry, you've trusted me to this point. You have to continue to trust me. There's somebody I'm going to send to you that's going to counsel you and comfort you. You'll understand. This is about to happen, and I'm telling you this, so when it does happen, you'll know that what I've said is true. Because right after he tells them, you know they're troubled. Because don't let your hearts be troubled. Right after he tells them that they're all going to fall away. Don't let your hearts be troubled. And he's in agony because he knows what they're going to go through as well as what he has to endure. And he's going to go and he's going to pray for them and he's going to pray for himself. Jesus is. About what he's going to suffer and what his apostles are going to suffer to watch their Savior be put to death. if we read in 14:29, after he's been talking a while, he says, I've told you now, before it happens, so when it does happen, you will believe. That's a recurring thing. He keeps saying, I'm telling you this now. I'm telling you this while I have this short time. I'm telling you, I'm preparing you. This is coming. He's been preparing him from way back there when he gave Peter the told Peter, you guys are going to have the keys to the kingdom, that this day was coming, and now it's here. We continue reading in John the 18th chapter. Jesus has been with his apostles in the garden, and he's been praying. He's prayed for them. He's been talking to them. He's been comforting them. They've been taking a snooze. He sees Judas coming to do what he's already been prophesied to do, which is betray Jesus. And Jesus gets up to meet him. Jesus gets up to meet him, and right away we see Peter again. The others say, shall we get our swords? Peter doesn't hesitate. He takes out his sword, whacks off the ear of the priest guard, the servant named Malchus. You can see Peter still thinks he's in control. Peter still thinks, I can change this. Peter still thinks, this will of God, I can move it. He can't. But he does give Jesus an opportunity to show him one more miracle. Puts the guy's ear back on. So, Peter is now being told by Jesus, we talked about this. This is not going to happen with a sword. This is not the way this is happening. And then he puts the guy's ear back on. The one part that Jesus told them that we read, that Joe read, has already happened right here. They're scattered. They've run. They've abandoned him. Except for Peter and another. Because Peter still has it in his mind, he can change this. I can fix this. I can do something. I can somehow affect the outcome of this, because it doesn't fit with what I believe this should look like. It doesn't fit. In Luke's account, if we turn over to Luke, the 22nd chapter, to me, Luke's account gives us just the closeness or the how personal or how this stuff isn't happening at a distance. This is happening in close proximity. Peter is to Jesus, to the people that have gone along from the time that Jesus is arrested to now, they're in close proximity to one another. They're not like he's off in the bleacher somewhere watching. He's followed into the high priest's courtyard to see what's going to happen. And in the 22nd chapter, verse 54 through 62, and I debated reading this because it always gets me. So I'll try. So maybe I won't read it. We'll just talk about it so I can speak. So, but we see there that Peter in this reading is there. He's close. And people are calling him out. They're saying, hey, aren't you one of those guys? Aren't you with us? Didn't we see you over there? Even a relative of the guy who's had his ear cut off says, hey, not in this reading, I don't think it's in another one, didn't you just chop off my relative's ear over there? No, that wasn't me. No, it wasn't. Wasn't I? Why wasn't it? That's not. And the third time he denies Christ in the 61st verse of Luke 22. It says Jesus looked at him. Ouch. It took him back to what he had been told. What he'd been told was, I'm telling you this, Peter, so you're going to believe. This is how it's going to happen. This is the sacrifice that needs to be made. This is the will of God. He's come to a realization that all this time where he thought, I can affect this. I can change this. I will get my sword out and start, hacking people up with it to make this not happen, that it is going to happen. Because the thing that he thought he would never do, the thing that Jesus told me would, and he said, no way will I do that, just happened. Not just once, not just twice, because I think Peter was a little hard-headed. It happened three times. Three times to this guy that's been through all this stuff with Jesus. This man who's now outside the gate weeping. Again, I think we have to see ourselves there. Maybe not coming out and saying that denying him right out, but say, have you denied Christ? Have you denied it to the people around you when you haven't said something that you should have said? When you haven't acted like Christ? Would some say, well, that guy doesn't know Christ. That guy's not a Christ follower. When you haven't done the thing that you should do, when you haven't acted the way you should have acted or thought what you should have thought, isn't that a denial of Christ? Isn't that saying, no, I don't, I'm with you. But until I think it should go my way, I know for me I have, to where you found yourself crossed up with the will of God, try to do it your own way, try to do it the way you thought you could affect it, only to be weeping bitterly to know that you didn't listen. You didn't do it the way God has told you to live, to be caught in this mess without relying on the Word of God? It's easy to look at Peter and say, wow, I don't know. Why did he do that? It's us. He's human. When the pressure was on, he saved himself. Luckily, for us, we have the rest of the story, as Paul Harvey would say. If you're too young, Google it. Because we know that Peter didn't stay in this condition. We know that Peter, even though he fell down, even though it took him falling down to realize that God was in control, that this was a perfect plan, that this was going to happen no matter what he thought he could do about it, he had to be put in such a place that he thought he would never be to realize that God was going to go ahead with what he had sent out to do, his son to do, that Christ was going to die for him. And as we read in the end of John, in the 21st verse of John, the apostles went fishing. And on the third time they've seen Jesus since he's raised from the dead, the third time they see him walking on the shore. And Peter, again, being Peter, puts his clothes on and goes swimming. Because that's what he did. He saw Jesus, and he got dressed and jumped in the water. Not a little ways, like a 100-yard swim. Because he saw the Lord. And here we get to see Jesus say, Peter, I know, fell down. He doesn't say it in that many words, but I think by telling him three times, he's telling him, look, you've got work to do. You might have fallen down, but now it's time to get back up and go. Because guess what? God uses flawed humans to accomplish his will. Peter, I think he's one of those guys like Jim always talks about, often wrong but never in doubt. Is that the way it goes? He was a few times wrong, but he was usually never in doubt. He charged in head first every time. This thing that was about to happen as we get into Acts, Peter had a job to do. Peter had a job to do. He needed to put his failures and his flaws behind him. And you notice when Jesus tells him this stuff, and then he tells him how he's going to die, you know what's gone? I'm a pretty healthy guy. I don't know if that's going to work like that. There's no argument as in before. Because now he knows. When Jesus says it, it's probably going to happen. Even if it's not the way I think it should go. But we see here, in this restoration or reinstatement or, I don't know what you want to call it, returning to just his confidence in what he had to do, Christ knew he needed this. He needed this. He needed to be told, look, I know you love me. Do you really? Because you got work to do. You've got work to do. Those keys that we talked about earlier, you're about to use them. Those keys that we talked about so long ago, when the very next thing I had to say was, get behind me, Satan. You're about to use those keys. You're about to tell everybody the good news. I think we can find ourselves in these stories. These stories that we need to read and study and apply them to our daily lives. Because we can find ourselves in places of denial of Christ. And I say it not be coming right out and saying it, but it's in how we talk and how we act and what goes through this melon. The thoughts that come into it. We have to say, does that deny Christ? Or does that make me Christ-like? Well, if you haven't responded to that good news, that taken up the keys to the kingdom as Peter's about to use in Acts, you need to do it today. If you've been denying Christ or trying to make it work out your own way, it's time to study and know that God's in charge. He's got a way. And we can fight it like Peter, or we can accept it and apply ourselves and feed the sheep, take care of the flock, spread the word. Well, if you have any needs, we're going to stand and sing. And if you come forward, you'll be heard.